All right, welcome to another episode of Make Shit Happen. Today's special guest is none other than Colton Bollinger, man. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sam. Looking forward to it, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. So guys, for everyone that doesn't know Colton, Colton is the founder of Jumper Media. Jumper Media was founded about 10 years ago. They have worked with big brands such as Lamborghini, Porsche, Tiesto, and Yelp, just to name a few. They've created thousands of unique videos online and worked with over 380 clients. And one of the things that really captivated me around what Colton and his team does is how affordable they make video editing and social media growth for everyone from small businesses to large corporations. So I really wanted to get Colton on today to deep dive into, you know, some content strategy and around how you should be incorporating that into your business. So Colton, why don't we start with, for people that don't really know you or know much about Jumper Media, how would you summarize your services and what you do and how you help clients?
Yeah, well, since day one, we've always liked to say that we help businesses tell their story. And I think everything we do kind of still encompasses that that mission statement. You know, we started with Instagram growth and social media management about 10 years ago. And that has evolved into a lot of different services, but we're still our main product is Instagram growth. And then now we do a lot of local SEO, like basically local business, any service that is providing a local Google result when you Google it. Like, so if it's a coffee shop, restaurant, plastic surgeon, dentist. So we've really ventured into that lately. And then obviously the video editing, right? So we try to help any local business or SMB has always been our kind of core clientele. And now with the Instagram growth, we're launching into a little bit more of the medium-sized businesses like Juneshine and some other CPG brands that are pretty good size. So that's what we're trying to get going to. And the video editing has just been a blast to get involved with. It was an internal tool that turned into a product that we've been able to offer and partner with a lot of amazing creatives that inspire me. I think, and as I see the video and edits come through, it's just awesome to be able to be a part of that creation process with so many cool brands and awesome creators like yourself.
Yeah, 100%. And I think there's such a massive shift now towards the creator or attention economy now more than ever, especially online with, you know, YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, all of those platforms. Everyone is creating content now more than ever. And I know for myself, like especially over the past 12 months, the amount of content that I want to be putting out versus actually putting out is on a scale of say 10 to 1. And then I've used you guys for my last podcast episode with Logan, and just the seamless ease of incorporating you guys into the business has been fantastic for me to take that off my hands and to be able to just plug you guys into what I do. Where most of your clients that you have on board, what kind of industries would you say they're a part of?
So, I mean, the general social media like Instagram growth is probably our biggest client base. Mm-hmm. So we have about 1,200 clients that we grow the Instagram pages for across the board. The majority are going to be, I mean, just SMBs. I mean, it's a variety of industries. I don't think there's any like one leader. You know, you've got real estate agents, you've got restaurants, you've got mortgage companies, you've got CPG brands, there are a lot of CPG brands of like different products, like chips, drinks, you know, like everything you walk into the grocery market and see a lot of those new pop-up and snacks are very popular.
Yeah.
They all want to build their audience. And then the Insta or for video editing, obviously, I think, I mean, 99% of our clients are videographers and cinematographers, which, you know, we've had some businesses come to us too. I think that's been an interesting like effect of a lot of videographers are, you know, they want us to sign NDAs and, you know, don't talk to our clients and yada, yada, yada. And it's like, it's not hard to figure out who you're editing for. Right.
Yeah.
But I think the funny thing is, you know, even if that client were to come out and like see our, like there's a someone who reached out to us because we posted an edit we did on our social channels and they're like, take it down right now. You know, like, I don't want my client to see it. And I just called them and I was like, man, what do you think is going to happen if your client comes across our post on social media, right? The $20 an hour for video editing. Okay. It's cheaper than what you're charging. Awesome. So they're going to come into me and like, it's not in my best interest to sell them video or like to allow them on the platform to start editing, right? And cut you out for one. But also I think the other aspect that creators don't realize is the value that they hold with the creation process and that whole editing process themselves, right? Like any business doesn't just come in and have the ability to take the raw footage and then communicate that to the editor of how they want it edited, right? Part of it's directing with our editors, right? Like the brief, and even though it takes 5 to 10 minutes, it's still a knowledge set and ability to communicate what you really want as that final outcome to the editors effectively, right? And without a ton of revisions, right? It gets how concise, how knowledgeable you are about the footage and just organizing it for them. I think that's something where that's why we don't have businesses and I don't market the businesses, because business owner just doesn't get it, right? And as you know, it's like there's a process to developing the content, cutting it up, having the right hooks, especially with short form now, how important that is. I mean, I watched the episode with Logan. It was awesome. And I was actually on a call with him like a week before the episode came out, and I saw the edit come through. I was like, oh shit. So it was cool. It was cool to see kind of a recap of it again. And, but yeah, I mean, it's so important having the right hooks and having that creative mindset in the edit process as well. Right. So I think it's just been a real journey. Even myself going through that and scaling this editing team from, you know, what, 6 guys to 56 in the last 6 months. Since we kind of launched it, it's been insane.
Wow. Man, that's a lot of growth. What would you say has made you grow so fast in terms of going from 6 to 56 editors?
I think it's, there's been reasons for growth and reasons for like a lot of actually stunting the growth. The first 2 months in, we were just on fire. We scaled up, we hired 20 editors to start with. So I went from 6, and I kind of ate the cost of just hiring 14 more editors full time, because 6 kind of kept my team busy. Trained them, vetted them. We interview about 60 editors for every one that we hire. Mm. So it's a process, right? I'm a big believer that the portfolios and example videos that you see on Fiverr and Upwork and a lot of these freelancer websites, they're misleading in a lot of ways. But the biggest reason why they're so misleading is a lot of them are the portfolio pieces of like you and I and their clients they already work for, right? So yeah. The first edit comes in usually from an editor you hire, and that edit is, you know, dog shit, for my lack of better words. And then you have to go through and decide, okay, well, my deadline is Friday. I already hired this guy, sent him the raw footage, waited for 3 days or whatever it was. You know, do I just work with this or do I go through the process again? And most of us are like, oh, I'll just work with this. So you send a bunch of notes to the editor, basically shot select for him, go through that whole process. And, you know, it ends up being when he delivers it, it's kind of more your edit than his, right? Yeah. So he takes that piece and puts it in his portfolio. And that's what you and I see when we're going through edits and comparing portfolios, is it's more of, it's just the culmination of their clients and how good they were at shot selecting. And so we prioritize our interview process of, we just send a folder of raw footage to the editors, I give them almost no direction. I just want an event recap. I let them come back with their first cut. And I just want to see what they come up with in shot select themselves, because a big part of our efficiency and this platform is having editors that have the ability to shot select themselves and save the time of culling and going through that footage and trying to get everything organized in a way for the editor not to screw up, versus dumping your footage to the editor and letting them save you time and actually cull the footage, you know, similarly to how you and I would, and have that ability with the right eye to get that content quicker to you. So I would say that's a big reason why we scaled so fast, is we just made sure to find the right type of editors and find those diamonds in the rough just through mass quantity and interviewing process, right? We found a really efficient way to interview quickly, and that worked really well. Then about 2 months in, we started running Facebook ads, after month one, and we scaled from like 60 clients to, I think we had 300 in the pipeline. And wow. It was just crazy. So we were trying to hire more editors and keep that quality, and we just couldn't hire them fast enough. So about the third month, we just hit this ceiling, this glass ceiling, and broke it. And delays got too long. Everything kind of, you know, went to crap. And I think we started having some negative feedback. And it was just, how do we keep the pieces together? How do we hold on to our core group of editors and, you know, take care of the clients that are unhappy? But then I still had to figure out like that chicken and the egg of how do you get more editors faster because I thought we were hiring fast enough and I just didn't expect the demand. I ran a lot of Facebook ads with a lot of clients over the last 10 years. And I think that it's a weird market fit, as you said, right? Like a lot of editors are overpriced, right? It's hard to find a quality editor and it takes time. And I think for a lot of creators, as you get busier, as you said, you want to create 10 times more content than you're actually able to put out. It becomes this race of, well, how do you find enough editing power and people you trust? Mm. And a lot of times you interview a person, you work with them and they're part-time and then they're busy with other people, other clients. Then you got to find another one. And that repetitional cycle kind of keeps happening and happening, right? And we wanted to create this process and service where you don't have to worry about finding more. It's like you just put more content, and the vetted trust editors are there as you need. So once we found out how to get that chicken and the egg and start hiring more editors and vetting them faster, that was kind of the solution that we came up with last month. And so we just turned everything back on about 4 weeks ago. And so we're back up on the scaling train. So we hired another 20 editors. So it took us from like 27 to I guess we had about 30, 35 or so before. So now we're at 56. So we had another 20 editors and now we're adding about 3 to 5 per week.
Wow.
But we're essentially found a great way to reach videographers and editors in other countries and bring them into our funnel and start interviewing them. So that was the disconnect, is like, how do you, the typical job hunting boards and Fiverr and that stuff, you're not reaching a lot of the local talent. And we knew that. So once we tapped into some of those local infrastructures and got more of the word out in a unique way, we started getting a lot more leads and we were able to fill that void of a lack of editors. And now it's just kind of balancing and keeping up quality. I think over the last month we've seen, still a lot of things to improve on, but it's just been so crazy, with the demand for this. And it's easy to screw up though. Right. So like that setback for hitting and not having enough editors, you put a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. And then you got to kind of regain their trust again, right? Like editing's a very close to heart thing. I think, for any of us, it's a personal branding mechanism, right? Like everything that goes out is a piece of you, especially for personal brands or people who are putting out a lot of content like yourself, and you're cutting those reels up, the short form content. There's a certain vibe and feel you want your videos to have. And when you have an editor, it doesn't get that. It slows your processes down. It's stuff you don't want to put out, waste time, money. So it's important for us to be able to have editors that, uphold that and don't distrust people. Cause when they get something that isn't up to their, par, they're quick to just not trust you anymore. So
yeah,
I think we've seen it takes about anywhere from 3 to 4 edits that are successful and the client is happy with, for them to fully kind of trust you with their projects. And then after about 7 or 8, they can have an edit that's a little bit below par, and they can work with the editor and kind of work with you. But I think up until like 7 or 8 edits with a new partner, we're still kind of earning that trust very much so.
Yeah. Like I think for me, like with all the podcasting and some of the other stuff that I do inside of my business, two most important things that I care about the most. One is obviously creating and scripting great content and interviews with people mm-hmm. like yourself. And then the second thing is having exceptional edits. And for a lot of people out there, they might have the first thing down pat, but in terms of having exceptional edits, if I was someone starting off in a business, like let's say I have a podcast like this, and I'm looking to create, a few short form, few short form contents, long form, what makes a great editor? Like if I'm starting off, what do I need to look for in terms of if I'm hiring an editor, what would you say stipulates a great editor?
So my recommendation for hiring an editor is exactly how we have found out just testing through scale, is I give them little to no direction. I send them a bunch of raw footage from an event or a certain type of, whatever I'm filming, or it could be a real estate house video or raw footage from that. Could be your podcast stuff, right? And send them an example of the video you like and just be like, hey, I don't want to see what you come up with, right? And that's usually the best way to test and get a real feedback, because you get to see a few things. You get to see their shot selection ability naturally. You get to see how well they can manipulate their style to match what you like. and you get to see their time frame and their working speed, right? How long they're going to deliver it to you. And we pay them too, right? We pay them for the 5 hours they work on it. Typically it's about a 5 hour test project. So it's $50 to $100 depending on what you're paying, right? Like, I mean, it's ranges from that for a good test. And then, you know, you do that with, I mean, you don't have to do 60 of them, but maybe do like 5 or 10, right? Like figure you're going to spend $400 to $1,000 on that first few weeks of testing editors before you find a good one. And I would just repeat that as that one gets busy. But I mean, ideally that's the best way to test is just through proof in the pudding. And I think the best way is with your own footage. Cause that lets you know they understand how to work with it. You know, they're comfortable with it and they can cull through it quickly. You know, versus like just going off of portfolios or example edits, that's where I think people make mistakes because as we discussed before, like those edits that they're showing you aren't always just how they perform or how they can shot select themselves.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's some great inside knowledge right there. So guys, if you're listening, take note to that. In terms of social media growth, I know you guys do the editing side, but you also focus on social media growth in terms of, you know, you've got your Queen Bee method. We were discussing something else earlier, but you got that. And then you have obviously your social media handlers that look after accounts, which we were also talking about. When it comes to spending money on growth on Instagram, there is a million and one ways to do it from, you know, let's say the right end of the spectrum versus the cheap and nasty and wrong side that can get your account shadow banned side of things. What are some of the key things that you've seen inside your business that you would recommend for other people to engage with that's not, I guess, too costly, but has consistent growth and why?
So the main consistent growth I've seen is just from testing different forms of content, right? And this is nothing new to you or anyone else. I think it's the content forms and hooks that you're testing at scale. It's hard for most people to think about this or to spend the time organizing it. But I mean, we're all creating content and posting it. And I think our clientele, to give you like a kind of an insight, is I would say about 25% of our clients, 25 to 30%, have already found a content form and hook form and editing form that trends from time to time, right? They found a little bit of virality where they come to us and they're like, hey, I want to add some gasoline to the fire and let's have that snowball effect and grow it more. And then the other 75% are the people who just don't know how to grow their Instagram, which also means they don't know how to create content first and foremost, right? Because if they did, they wouldn't be coming to us to grow their Instagram.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the truth in it all is if you can't create content that's effective, it doesn't matter how many eyeballs we drive to your page, how many ads you run, how much money you spend with any agency like us or anyone else. Ultimately, if the content sucks, nobody's going to want to engage or do anything anyways. So you may end up with some followers, but the engagement will suck. And that's also like not something you can blame on an agency you work with or a content creator you work with or I guess third party services a lot of time. It's or Facebook ads, right? It's your content and how well people are responding to it, to your target niche. So my recommendation is just to test more, get more creative and just have fun with it, right? Like it's going to take time. It's going to take a spreadsheet to organize that shit because that's what you need to do. I have seen enough clients come through my door that have the same spreadsheet almost to a T with never talking to each other. Just a list of like 20 or 30 creatives. And then they take that and they test different copy. It's really crazy how similar the natural content refinement process is for almost every client or coach or person who has just been testing on their own and found their navigated through those waters themselves. When I go through and I ask them to see their spreadsheets and stuff and how they manage their content testing, it's always like the same format. It's very similar, right? And it's just, they're always testing 10 or 20 different variations and they're editing on CapCut, whatever it may be, like easy little things, but that's why they're getting the extra 10 or 20,000 views once a month. That's why they slowly made, you know, progression. And that's where I think we all fail, right? It's, you can do that without paying anyone anything. It's just getting a little more organized and putting the time in to test those variations. And there's so much material out there, an example and so many examples of people who are creating content that is working in your industry. Don't reinvent the wheel. Just, you know, put like a pneumatic tire on it and make it a little smoother, right? Take what's working and refine it with your own taste, your own swing on things, and then test. That would be my main recommendation for everybody.
Yeah, I think like what's worked really well for me in terms of, you know, gathering research without having to spend hours on hours trying to find what's working and what's not is I will use Google Trends just to see what's going on in terms of word sense, in terms of my industry. So if I go on Google Trends and I'll type in podcasting, then I'll get up and see what all the trends are. The other thing that I do is like a lot of people do this, but I'll type in the first word of whatever it is that I'm wanting to talk about in the YouTube search bar, and that'll come up with, you know, the most searched for top 10 things with that particular word that you type in. So if you type in, say, Trump in YouTube and don't press enter, it'll come up with 10 keywords that come along with Trump, which means that's normally the top 10 things that are being searched in regards to Trump, which has been a little thing that's helped me a lot. But I think one of the biggest things that I've struggled with is posting at scale and creating content at scale. It's a hard thing to do, especially if you're a one-man band and you don't have, let's say, a team of 15, 20 editors behind you, because once you start doing that, it becomes very costly. And one of the things that I've looked at, and as we're speaking about, I had Logan on the podcast last week, and he was talking about one of the strategies that he implemented to take big marketers like Gregor Gallagher or Manny Koshman and take their content, rip it apart, and basically post, you know, 5-6 times a day across 20, 30, 50 different accounts, which then, as he kind of discussed, you only need 1% of those to go viral to then start creating a bit of a snowball effect. Because when you're posting that much volume and it's up to a certain level of quality, one of those has to kick off at some point. So I know you offer what you call the beehive, or is it the beehive? Is that right? The beehive strategy, is that correct?
Yeah, it's we call it the queen bee growth. Yeah, exactly.
The queen bee growth. Do you want to explain to the audience how that works? Because I've been looking into that for the past 3-4 weeks, and it just blows my mind around how all that structure works and just the amount of manpower behind something like that. And a lot of people probably aren't even aware of how this method even works, or have even heard of it before.
Yeah. So essentially how Logan's doing things, it's kind of similar to that. We just do it a little bit bigger scale, and we're not really doing the posting or distribution of content necessarily. We're building pages that are very relatable and genuine to your audience. So for example, you can look at a company like, say, Juneshine, for example, right? One that we worked with. They did a analysis on their drinkers and their audience of the product, and like 60% there is an affinity with yoga, right? Interest in yoga. And so they came to us and like, yeah, we want to target people who are yogis. So in order to do that, we call it the queen bee method because it's very similar to a beehive, right? We have the queen, which is your account, and we protect that, right? We don't need your password. We don't need access to your account. So a lot of people have, you know, and us included, right? We've been doing this for 10 years. Like, we used to do all of our Instagram growth from logging into your account and actively engaging with your target audience. That creates password issues. Having other people in your account is always a pain in the butt. You know, you have to deal with the engagements and the follows and things like that, right?
Yeah, people reading my personal messages either.
the DMs are a funny one too. Yeah. People are, I mean, fair enough, right? That's a whole nother can of worms. But yeah, so now we don't need any of your passwords or any access to accounts. What we do is we actually build about 100 accounts that are specific to your industry and audience. So if we're doing targeting yogis, right, we go and, you know, basically pull content of, you know, our team puts together a block of content for, we do in a whole SOP, right? We put together a block of content for certain interest base, which would be yoga. Okay. Where do we want the girl to be living? You know, it could be LA, it could be San Diego, it could be Miami, whatever it is. And then we grab, you know, some AI generated like profile pictures. We manipulate it. Sometimes we'll take a random picture from some random girl in Minnesota, put it through an AI, change a little bit. And then that's kind of the profile picture to, you know, act and look like a real girl, right? I would look at it kind of like a fishing lure, like the best looking fishing lure you can put in the water. You're reeling it in and it's swimming and looking like a real, like, you know, fish. And our goal is to catch a big fish and bring it back in the boat, right? So same kind of concept. These are all what we call the worker bee pages. And just like the beehive, those worker bees go out, they grab the pollen, it sticks to their legs, they fly it back to the hive, and they make the honey. these pages we build, they are actively going out targeting the followers of your target audience. So if it's a if we're going after yogis, we're looking at the followers of Aloe, we're looking at the followers of you know, any yoga brand, right? Like Yoga Sixes, any Pilates studios. Like, you can kind of get creative with it, but yoga, other yoga instructors, right? Who's following other yoga instructors? If they're following all these pages, they're typically invested to some degree in yoga. And that's how we segment the audience. So then you have a girl who the pages that we built, right? They get follow, they follow one of these yogis, and the yogi is going to get a follow from that page on her push notification. Look at the page, be like, okay, she looks, she's in a yoga too. She lives in LA like me. Okay, awesome. You know, I'll follow her back. And once that follow happens, our system then sends a direct message to that yogi that we engaged with. And it'll be like, hey, great to connect with another yoga enthusiast. You know, it looks like we both live in LA. I just started helping out Juneshine with some social stuff. Please give him a follow. It'd mean the world. Like, it helped me out a ton. And so we do a little ask, a polite DM, and that actually drives about 20 to 25% conversions to a follow for Juneshine. So it's really a numbers game. We've scaled this out to a pretty good extent now. We're working with about 750 clients just on that service, from all different ranges and sizes and industries. But it's, everything's custom built for the client industry. So that's the key thing here, is it takes us 30 days to set up all these accounts. And that's, I mean, we did a holiday sale and we're backed up to like 45 or 50 days right now, just because it's so backed up with 350 new closes. So it definitely takes time. The reason why it works is because we spend that time though, right? Is building these pages by hand and getting that content and organizing it, so that these pages are, you know, legitimate and real feeling and genuine, to engage with your target audience and get that follow back. I'm sure we've all gotten followed by like spammy, like OnlyFans shit or like weird accounts that just send you a random direct message. And that's why those don't work anymore. We're also trained, right? So we put together this program about 2 years ago and building out this infrastructure, very much focused on, we know that the capabilities of having that many accounts in the reach, like you said, but there still needs to be a genuineness level to it. And that takes time to put together and put it together in a cohesive way to where it does feel genuine. And that's what I think that's what I'm enjoying a lot, is it's getting better and better every day, right? So every week we do this, and every account we build out, every client we take on, we're finding and innovating new ways to make these accounts more genuine and engaging in more genuine ways.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating how much work goes into a strategy like that. Like it must take a lot of time, but in sense of growth from a strategy like that, what kind of growth have your clients seen from the Queen Bee method?
Yeah. So we've got like packages ranging from 1,000 followers a month to 10,000 followers a month. I mean, we have custom packages that are higher than that, right? It just depends on budget and what they want to put into this and how quickly they want to grow. But yeah, the beautiful thing is that it's very sustainable. So we're doing such low activity from these accounts that they just kind of, they live, they love, and they engage, you know, very consistently. We don't have issues maintaining all of these accounts because we're doing such low activity each day. Once we get this thing rolling and rocking, it's pretty consistent and pretty stable for every client. Guarantee the 1,000 or 3,000 or 5,000 followers a month. And usually we'll exceed that, right? Like if we're planning it out, we'll usually build a few extra pages to make sure we're hitting those numbers. And if we're not, we just push the billing date back, make sure we build more pages. So next month, for whatever reason, if it's, we predicted things a little bit wrong, then we'll change the strategy a little bit, might create different pages. You know, it's not like every single one's a home run, but within the first 1 or 2 months, we'll dial it in to where we're hitting results that are expected by the client.
And who would you say out of all the clients that you've worked with, who would you say is one of your favorite?
I don't know if I can pick a favorite, but I can definitely tell you an outlier was a, what do you call it? Not a he/she, but a, why am I blanking right now? You know, the guy who dresses up like a girl and goes on stage.
God, I was like, oh, what is he, a comedian?
No, you can probably cut some of this part out, but it's a queen. What's it called? A not a drama queen, but
what trans?
It's late. It's late. No, not a trans. It's a guy who dresses up. A drag queen.
Oh, drag queen.
In Australia?
Yeah, fuck yeah. They're everywhere. There's a little venue. It's funny. It's like it's called Cloudland here in Brisbane. So it's like a bar. Really nice. It's got a bit of a Gatsby theme to it. A massive like staircase. You walk up and down and everyone can see you walking up and down the staircase. And Monday to Sunday, it's like a normal bar and club and whatever. And then on Sundays, they have gay nights. So it's like the drags come out and perform and do all that sort of stuff. So
yeah. I love it. Well, yeah, that was probably the most unexpected client I've ever had was a drag queen. And I think I picked up the phone call because he scheduled the call as like, it was like Greg, right? Greg Dunn or whatever his name was. I don't remember. and it's like, grab the call and you're like, he's like, hey, how you doing? I was like, good. You know, like, tell me a little about your Instagram, you know? And I was like on my phone or something. I was coming into my house and I was just opening my computer and we're having this normal conversation, you know? And then I open up his page and it's just like, you know, this completely unexpected business, right? And I was like, okay, well, okay, so you do, this is you. He goes, and his voice completely changes. And he's like, oh yeah, that's Daphne, you know, like that's my stage name. And I was so caught off guard. So that was a new one. I would say my other favorite client is a beekeeper who travels around and saves bees. He relocates beehives that people call about and, you know, are trying to get moved or removed from their property or business. And he created a hell of a business going around and basically safely relocating these bees to other beekeeper homes and hive locations, wherever they are. But yeah, that's a super fun account to grow because, I mean, everybody loves bees, right? They're becoming...
Fuck, good. If you asked me a week ago if I like bees, I would have said I'm not too sure. There's this new gym that's opened up just behind my place here, and they've got like livestock on the rooftop here. So they've got like chickens, bees, all this crazy shit. And it's like a gym and then a wellness center and then livestock. And one of the guys that's preparing food for everybody, he must have gone to collect the honey, and he's gone up to the rooftop and he's like obviously taking off all the honeycomb and all that off the hive, and the bees start going ape shit. And I'm on the rooftop with my mate enjoying a meal. And the next thing you know, four bees just come out of nowhere and fucking start stinging me all over the face. I'm sitting here just eating a chicken salad and I got stung in the face by about three bees. And I had to get up and jump in the fucking pool just to get away from them because they were so fucking angry. So when you say beekeeper, I'm like, fuck, I think we need one of those here. But
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a big fan of bees either, but I know they're like, everybody loves the honey. They're kind of like, they're becoming more protected here in the States. I don't know about in Australia, but like it's now illegal to kill a bee in California, at least. Yeah. So that was like talking to him was cool on the calls we have and checking calls. It's, you learn some things with dealing with all these businesses and social media and this podcast too. You can talk some really interesting businesses and learn some shit you never expect to. But for him, it was like, he's struggling. And then like, I don't know, a few months ago or a year ago, California made it illegal for exterminators to kill bees. So all of a sudden you can't have an exterminator and you have to have a certain license now. So now everybody who has a beehive to exterminate or get rid of, they have to call someone like him to come out and relocate it. So it's all about timing, right?
Yeah. 100%. When it comes to filming and editing, well, we touched on a lot of the techniques and the strategies that you guys employ within your business for editors and also other businesses. One thing that I've always wanted to, I guess, get more of a definitive answer from you guys, because I'm imagining you guys do a lot of filming yourselves, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I probably film maybe 3 or 4 times a month, not a ton. Yeah. Used to film a lot. I had a 10-person like production crew internally full time, and that slowly but surely kind of phased out, and we just kind of focused more on the editing and social management side of things. And yeah, that's kind of where it grew. But I still film for a handful of clients.
What would you say in terms of like raw content has been some of the best footage that you've seen and that's worked in terms of like growth for strategy? Like, has it been more lifestyle shots, entertainment, talking head like this? Or in your opinion, what would you see has been the more favorable type of content?
Favorable for like the algorithm on Instagram and driving yeah. growth like that?
Yeah, just in terms of growth, yeah.
I don't think there's like a clear answer on that. Like as everybody says, it's I love when you hear someone who's like, oh, I'm an Instagram expert or like an Instagram coach, and like there's things to coach with, but dude, nobody knows the algorithm unless you signed an NDA with Instagram yesterday morning when they updated it, right? But I do think as the pieces of content that work the best tend to be something that is very relatable and makes you want to keep watching more of it, right? And that's not rocket science, but it's like usually it doesn't have to be high end. It doesn't have to be a cell phone. Like there's no rhyme or reason. But the stuff that tends to predictably perform better, it just makes you keep watching it. Right. And I think people get better and better as they film more and they post more at those techniques to keep the watcher engaged and looking forward to what's coming next. It's like a sales funnel, right? It's like almost the landing page has become the video content in a lot of ways. And that's something I don't know if many marketers expected back in the day, but now it's very much like, how can you take this top of funnel content that we're cutting up for Instagram reels and keep people engaged and want more and more and more so that it gets pushed to more people. And essentially that drives more people to your landing pages, right? So yeah. It's a whole new top of funnel movement almost. But it's so unpredictable. Like it's a lot of hooks are different, I would say. Like the content and the amount of video edits we see coming through, especially for Instagram reels, a lot of people are trying to do like the viral hooks where it's like a dog running up and biting the camera for the first second, and then it cuts to whatever their content is, right? That's pretty popular. I would say trending songs. A lot of people are still on this trending song game where they think if they add this specific song from Instagram and they make us download the song from Instagram and do that. Like I see what the editors deal with. And I think there's a lot of things that I also see on social front where it's like that works, but it doesn't work. And like, it's just, I think people spend a lot of time trying to play this game. And if you just create good content, it ends up working anyways.
It's like a trying to dress up it's like a pig with lipstick. Like, might look good on the outside, but it's still a pig. Like,
100%. It's probably the best way to put it right there.
Yeah, it's just a pig with lipstick. But for all the people at home that are, again, staying with their businesses and they're not really good at editing, what would you say? Because, like, for myself personally, like, I have a mixture of, you know, like Riverside is what I used to record this, and it will do a lot of the initial gray editing that, you know, it's just the boring stuff. Like it'll take out all the ums and the ahs and I guess the gaps in the audio. If people are at home and they're wanting to start learning how to edit themselves, what software would you recommend is pretty user-friendly for beginners?
I mean, I think that's the probably the biggest proof in the pudding here of anything is I never even learned to edit, right? So I started a whole production company, started filming, got a GoPro and went through the whole process. And I did a couple edits on like, you know, whatever thing is on your Apple computer, right? The photo booth or whatever. But
yeah,
I think if you don't know how to edit today and you're shooting content, my advice is don't learn how to edit. Just learn how to hire a good editor and outsource cost effectively. Because if you spend the time that you're going to spend trying to learn how to fucking edit.
Yeah.
Into just finding a good editor and creating more content. If you can shoot twice as much content as you would be learning to edit and doing a shitty job at editing while you're at it, then just find a good editor and scale that. Because I think the benefits from creating that additional content, and if you have the means to pay for an editor, and it's not, I think people, it's not that expensive. Like we charge $20 an hour. Okay. And that's probably, I mean, it's a hell of a deal for the quality you're getting. But you can go on Fiverr and find a guy to edit talking head reels for, you know, $4 or $5 an hour, or whatever you want to do, right? Or from Philippines and onlinejobs.ph. Upwork is probably the more expensive echelon of the freelancing things. But I mean, you can find some cheap editors, and then it's just spending time developing them, right? So the more time you spend and work with them, you can get some really good results out of them. But I would definitely recommend people, if you're not editing full time, it's not your job. I wouldn't spend time learning. That would just, I'd be proof in the pudding of that, right?
Outsource it. Yeah, definitely. Cause I know I've tried to dabble with it, but again, like it's, especially when you look at things like Adobe, there's just so much to it. It would take you, 6 to 12 months just to become, I guess, efficient just in the basics of it. Like it's quite a lot. I always ask this question when I bring on people that are in the social media space, because I'm always eager to kind of get their take on where social media is. Where do you see social media and the content game and what people are using over the next 5 to 10 years? And I ask this because, I speak to editors, software companies, marketers, guys like yourself, guys like Logan, and with AI coming out now as well, like there's so much happening at such a fast rate that it's hard to even keep track of where things are going to be in the next 12 months, let alone the next 5 years. But do you see content being as important in the next 5 years as it is now?
It's kind of scary when you see these like AI developed women and AI developed like talking heads and shit.
Yeah.
It's a little bit concerning, to be honest, of like, I can tell you one thing. I think content will still be around. I think my prediction is OnlyFans is probably going to be obsolete within 5 years, based on like what some of our clients are like showing us what their AI modeling is doing. I think in terms of social media platforms, there'll probably be something that pops up in the next 5 years that gains attention too, right? But obviously TikTok and Instagram aren't going anywhere. I don't think that there's going to be a massive swing or flop like MySpace back in the day, right? I think Facebook has established itself so big and there's so many investors and stakeholders that it's going to be hard for them to just get wiped off, and they'll acquire people coming up. Like, and same thing with TikTok. It's like, I think they're both so big. You have Snapchat in the game too. I'm how I judge it is based off of what businesses are doing around us, right? When people are asking for what they're concerned about, obviously you have the younger demographics who are coming up, and what platforms they use are important. But ultimately, I haven't seen businesses really take to TikTok quite yet, like to the extent they're on Instagram still. So I think there's still kind of that valuation of Instagram more. If I talk to a business and what's more important to them today, Instagram is still kind of a little bit higher, except there's obviously outliers and there's businesses that crush on TikTok and that's all they do, right? But for us, out of the 1,200 clients we work with, I would say it's still Instagram. And content's going to be super important no matter what it is, whether it's AI driven or not. I think there's still going to be a relevancy in the market for content that's driving authenticity and user interest and keeping people engaged and reminders, right? Like no matter what form the content's in, we're still going to be limited by sanctions on AI. Like I think just tonight I was meeting with a friend of mine and he was telling me that they just put out a new sanction on AI cold calls, right? So they're going to be limiting it. And I think content creation, there's going to be a huge value in it from 5 years, probably more so now, right? I don't know what's going to happen with editing in 5 years, right? I think the interesting thing that will be a dictator is the file sizes of how fast you can transfer footage. I think you're limited by internet speeds more than AI right now. Yep. Of how fast fiber can get, right? Like 1 gig up, 1 gig down is pretty good. But even with, file sizes of these high-end cameras, it's going to be tough to whatever AI can do. You still got to send the footage, right? So we'll see. It'll be very interesting, but that's a great question. I think everybody's going to be asking that for the next 2 years of like, what's really going to happen and how fast it's going to move.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too, is like one thing that like, I've never been a very political person up until probably COVID hit and everyone was being forced to stay inside their homes. And that to me was just not something that I enjoyed, but I don't think anybody did. But when it comes to the platforms now and the whole freedom of speech thing and what's being monitored and what's being allowed to be spoken about and what's not, perfect example was literally today or late last night, Tucker Carlson released his interview with Putin. And that was shown on X, and he had it on his website. And I think there was one other platform that's considered freedom of speech, Rumble. So Rumble, X, and his own website, the Tucker Carlson Network. I went and interviewed Putin, and I sat there for the first hour watching the interview, and I was blown away by the fact that I was even watching him interview the president of Russia. But you look at all the things on, from Instagram to TikTok to Facebook. Like, I had Tate's, one of Tate's videographers on, Yaxo, about 4 or 5 months ago. And I consider him, in terms of an FPV drone pilot and the editing skills that he has equipped with how he films, I consider him one of the best in terms of what he's doing. And, you know, just because I had his name associated with Tate, the episode was instantly shadow banned on TikTok and on Instagram just for mentioning the name Tate. Not Andrew, but just no Tate, way. Just even in the word. It was shadow banned like instantly. Like my video was up for 24 hours and I had
crazy.
I had zero views. And I'm like, that's 100% shadow banned. I'm like, I normally get 700 to 800 views within the first 5 to 10 minutes, easy. And within 24 hours, I had none. And that to me is, it's very concerning, because when we spend all this time filming this content, getting people on board, doing the interviews and paying for the edits, and then going and scheduling the content and making sure it's keyword optimized and all this other stuff that we do. And then the platform then goes, no, sorry, we're not going to show it to anybody because that's considered hate speech, or it doesn't align with the current political agenda in the world. It is very concerning for guys like myself when I want to have all these interesting guests on, but when it's politically considered incorrect or hate speech, it's instantly not going to get shown to the right people. It even happened with guys like London Real, Brian Rose, you know, when he had on David Icke, who's the considered conspiracy theorist, when he talks about all the 9/11 stuff and all of this, he had a YouTube channel for 3 years, and he was like, I think he was top 10 biggest YouTube channel, number one podcast/interviewer on YouTube for about 12 months. And his whole channel just banned overnight, gone. Just everything just canceled just because he had David Icke on his channel, completely gone within 24 hours. And he went and fought it. I even think he went to court over it. And he ended up having to create his own freedom of speech platform where he was hosting all these future episodes now. And it's a little bit disheartening because, you know, I'm starting to build up a lot of my different channels, especially the YouTube channel. But because of the nature of what I do when I go and interview people, I have to consider things like this, because if I'm building up a YouTube channel and then I have an episode with, let's say I get Tucker Carlson on in the next 12 to 24 months, and because of who he's interviewed, he's considered hate speech, and then I bring him on my channel, and then all of a sudden, bang, overnight, my whole channel gets canceled. I then start going, well, shit, should I be building up my platforms on other avenues like X, or having my own website, or, you know, having it on Rumble, like what the Tates are having to do now, even though they're so big, it doesn't really matter for them. But it's just interesting just to see how controlled, you know, the media is, and especially with the algorithms, and especially with, Instagram and Twitter and all that stuff. Like, even yesterday, I put up a episode with Logan on TikTok yesterday. And I can't figure out why, but it didn't get shown to anybody for 24 hours. And then after 24 hours, they then let it get shown to people. Whereas the last two edits that I put up with Logan, I had views straight away. But then on this one particular reel, it wasn't shown to anybody for 24 hours, which was just, it blew my mind. So yeah, it's a bit of a, when it comes to the content creation side of things and the platforms that you choose to put it on, it's quite scary when you think about how much control, you know, overnight your entire platform can be decentralized and you can be taken off straight away.
I mean, I think that's the struggle with millions of people doing what you're doing, right? Like, everybody's in this state of constant excitement, but also fear and concern with what's going to happen when they post the content, right? I mean, because really it's at the control of Instagram or TikTok of how they want to handle it. But we just kind of got to roll with the blows and play within their realm, right? I mean, everybody's, it's funny if you look at the Instagram searches and SEO and things like that, it's everybody is, it's like, it's almost like a maze and we're the mice running around, and it's just a giant test for Instagram and Facebook and TikTok, right? They put up a new wall and they see how we react. They move the cheese somewhere else, or they change the algorithm benefits and weights. And then you can just watch all of the coaches and SEO and blog articles and everything go right about that. And they move a wall over here. Everything is, I think it is experimenting on how human behavior, they're learning so much. I mean, what other, back in the day, like where could you get this much user information about behavior and interests and what they're doing? I mean, it's crazy. So they have, their interests are, I think, aligned with more things than just like how many views our videos get in the bigger macro picture, right? Like, I think they're looking at like how they're shaping society, which, you know, at the end of the day, we're sitting here worrying about our views and why we're not like reaching as many people. They're sitting there worried about like, how is this macro subject going to affect the 6-year-olds who watch it worldwide, right? And I can't imagine what those discussions are. It's like kind of discussions like governments, right? Like, what is this community going to impact, or how is this new development home or home development going to impact the electricity grid for this 20 million person grid that we already have, right? I mean, it's things that we don't really think about as a whole, but I think, you know, it's very interesting. We'll see where things go with AI and everything else, because I think the next step is, how is AI going to analyze that data quicker? Because that's probably the bottleneck right now, is like, how do you look at everything? So yeah, it's, I can't tell you what it's going to be like, man, but it's scary, but also exciting. And I hope they stop filtering your content, because I'm sure it's good. I've watched many episodes.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, look, it is. I think AI is a very exciting tool, especially for not only big businesses, but also small businesses, because to have access to that kind of technology can delegate a lot of tasks off your hand and make workloads not only quicker, but also easier for you as well. So I'm very excited. Like, I'm currently experimenting with a AI model, as we were talking about earlier, that allows you to basically recreate a shoulders up version of yourself that basically monitors. You have to submit 30 minutes of your own voice talking. And then after the 30 minutes of your own voice talking, it then allows you to recreate short form and long form to a degree content where it's not actually you talking, but your voice, it's like 98% copied, and your head's moving and everything like that. And you're doing the facial expressions and everything, and it mimics exactly how you talk and how you move and even how your jaw moves and how your eyebrow raises. It's crazy. It's honestly crazy. But, mate, again, just want to say thank you.
What is that thing called for the viewers at home?
It's called, let me find it.
And for me.
I'll send it to you.
Shoot it over.
I've got it. I'll shoot it over to you after this, but I've got it somewhere saved. It's, man, it's absolutely crazy. I've got it written down somewhere. Where is it? Yeah, I'll find it. I'll send it to you after this episode. But man, it's nuts. Like, you can literally, all you have to do is give it a prompt. So you give it a script of the video in terms of what you want to talk about. You can give it a prompt, say, create a 20-second short form clip of the top 10 best practices when filming a podcast, and hit enter. And then it'll create the script for you. Or you can use ChatGPT to create the script. And then you copy and paste the script, and then you put it into the software once it's copied your face and your talking patterns and your voice and your tonality. And then it'll basically recreate the video based off that script. So it's not actually you in the video. It's just an AI version of you talking.
this is what's going to be scary, right? It's like, what's real, what's not. And then, I mean, there's so much content out there already that we can't consume. Like, what's going to happen when the people are just auto creating content, and how is that going to devalue, or how do you filter that shit? I think that's what's going to be the problem, is like, you have this, I think the overarching thing here that I think about is, we've been trained as, I guess, marketers and social media users, more and more content, spend more time filming, like push more out, it helps, right? But I think we're going to have a problem very soon where there's too much content being pushed out, and people have less and less time to consume. And more is being automatically created, right? More blogs, more videos. So what's the next step of that, right? Like, what's the next adjustment? And that'll be interesting, because AI is it's helping a ton. And I think that's going to be something where you're like, as a creator, like, I just do podcasts and talk and not have to work and do this, right? But ultimately, there's going to have to be a stopping point to that for people that want to consume it. Because when everybody knows it's all AI content, everyone's going to be like, okay, well, like, what's next?
I know YouTube now has a section when you're uploading videos where you have to disclose if it's AI generated content, because it'll then affect the algorithm based off whether or not it is. And if you lie about it and then the software picks up that it is, in fact, it'll shadow ban the content. So yeah, it's pushing people to be more ingenuous in terms of being honest about how the content's created. But the scary thing about that is there was a company about 2 weeks ago or a month ago that their head competition had used, I don't know if it was this particular software, but it was some sort of AI software where they mimicked the head of the board in a conversation talking about a particular topic that had to do with the company, and basically saying, it was more or less saying that the industry they were in was going to suffer, and it had stockholders and shareholders basically sell their portion of the company overnight. And the company lost, I think it was about 20 to 25% of their valuation overnight because their competition had put up a fake AI generated video about their company and the industry. And literally overnight, they overtook them because of this piece of content. So, I mean, look, I'm sure there'll be legal ramifications for that. But yeah, that's the world we're living in now. People are recreating content to basically fuck with their competition.
I mean, or fuck with your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. Yeah, like, what's real? What's not?
Yeah, 100%.
God damn.
Yeah, if your girlfriend breaks your heart and moves on to someone else, you can turn around and make a video pretending to be her.
There was one thing I forgot. That I forgot to say is, I think when we're talking about the platform and video editing, right? The one big thing I've seen everybody get a lot of benefit from is the ability to simultaneously edit 5 or 10 projects at one time. And that's something with just one editor that you outsource to. That's where I think Jumper Creation becomes a very valuable piece for a creator who's pumping out a lot of content, is you can test and iterate faster. Yeah. So instead of having one or two projects on the pipeline for your editor that you're working with, you could have 10 to 20 all being edited within the same week, then a 2 to 4 day turnaround time you're able to optimize for, tests, put up into ads, put into your socials. So that's it's kind of like having Logan's system at your fingertips, right? Just you have to manage the edits yourself, right? But I think that's the biggest value that we offer that's different from just hiring your own editor and going through your typical process.
Yeah, definitely, man. I definitely agree with that. There's a massive benefit to having access to that kind of service. If people were wanting to look you guys up, where can they find you? I'll put a description
Jumper
below.
Media.
Yeah.
Jumpermedia.co/creation. That would be the editing platform. Yeah. I think you guys will enjoy taking a peek at it. And we do a whole risk-free first edit. So we don't charge you until after you approve your edit. If you don't like it, you don't pay. That's been our motto since day one. It's what I would have hoped for going through all the edits and wasted money myself. And I think that's part of the reason is we're here to earn your trust. We don't expect it. And I think that's gotten us a long ways, you know, through this early journey with that is everybody's been pretty traumatized with shitty editors and wasted money. And it's nice having a service where you can just throw an edit through, see how it works for you and see how it fits with your budget, your footage, and then slowly progress from there, but with little to no risk on your end.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally agree with that. Well, look, Colton, man, thank you so much for coming on. And mate, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today and going through, I guess, all the stuff that you guys have done through at Jumper Media. I've definitely used you. I think you guys are great. So guys, if you want to go check out Jumper Media, the descriptions will be in the comment notes, the show notes of the episode. So go through there and have a look. And again, Colton, man, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thank you so much, Sam. I appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers, absolutely. Guys.